The Guardian.
Before you get started with this edition of Football Weekly, we want to point you in the direction of our sponsor, Squarespace. For everything you need to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian to get 10% off your first purchase. And now, on with the show.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, midweek mayhem. Sweet Jesus, say City fans after West Ham win. Same for Arsenal fans after Watford loss. While Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United and Spurs all give up their points like Barry in January. What next? Only a round that sees the Gunners visit leaders Chelsea, now 9 points clear. While down at the bottom, it's smoke 'em if you got 'em. The relegation race is about to catch fire. We'll be talking about all of that plus post and the Derby d'Italia. Can Inter derail their arch-rivals' march to a 6th straight title? All of that in this Football Weekly Extra. Fresh back from Oslo, it's James Horncastle.
Hello,
Jim. Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Barry Glendening.
Hello.
And Sasha joining us. Hi, Sasha. How are you doing?
Thankfully, I wasn't in Oslo looking at the state of you guys.
No, that's not fair. We had a great trip to, where was it? Oslo. We had a lot of laughs and some victors, and there were three Olafs as well. Yeah. It was a big day, though, wasn't it, Barry? Because our visit coincided with the appointment of a new manager for the Norwegian national team.
Lars Lagerbäck.
Absolutely.
We all had to swat up frantically just before going on stage.
Absolutely. Anyway, it's a big appointment for them. They've got the Lagerbäck. And so is Barry, of course, because January is over and you had a beer, Barry.
I had several beers, yeah. The first one, I won't lie, was damn sweet. I was planning, actually, on carrying on into February indefinitely and... McIntosh was just annoying me so much that he drove me off the wagon and to drink.
Wow, I bet that tasted sweet. I'm thinking there's a kind of metaphor with Pep Guardiola. His throat parched to victories, but a magnificent 3 points rolled down his gullet. It's nice. I like the way this is going. Man City, the only team from the top six who won. They're now only goal difference behind Liverpool. After a 4-0 thrashing of West Ham at the London Stadium. Do you want a great stat?
Go on.
Man City have scored 3 times as many goals at the London Stadium this year as West Ham, and it's West Ham Stadium.
That is a good stat.
Right. What about Man City then? That he drops Aguero, he drops Bravo, and instead you've got these three up front. They're all about 13 years old. Sterling, Sane and Jesus.
Well, I think a lot of it also came from midfield because every time West Ham seemed to lose the ball, there was, I don't know, I think Aubameyang and Noble were supposed to anchor that midfield. They just simply weren't there. So De Bruyne breaks from midfield, just defenders backpedaling in front of him and just got West Ham got completely torn to shreds. I think something similar happened in the FA Cup as well. And
right.
Bilic just hasn't made any adjustments.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I did think that maybe they were going to be in a better place for this game. But when City do get their thing together, they could, you know, it's impossible to stop them. Barcelona, for example, taken apart by them.
But the point was made after the game, though, that effectively it was a very attacking Man City side and Touré was playing the kind of defensive midfield role. So if they come up against a better team, perhaps, that they might actually be caught out because that's not really a very weak... that's quite a weak central midfield.
Right. So that front three, you wouldn't expect to see them... Say if they go up against them.
Well, I mean, I don't know whether it's you could play those front three and Silva and De Bruyne all in one team against maybe someone a bit more savvy.
Meanwhile, will we see much of Claudio Bravo? Do you think in the future after Willy Caballero? Again, a stat here: Caballero with his third clean sheet of 2017, which is good because he's only played 3 matches. Whilst Claudio Bravo is having a save drought since the 2nd of January, he hasn't made a save since. The 2nd of January. He hasn't actually saved a ball in any game since the 2nd of January.
So technically you probably could have put a goalkeeper jersey on a broomstick and stuck it in the centre of a 6-yard box.
I guess so. And probably, yeah, interesting thought that.
Well, Chris Sutton was on 5 Live the other night and they were talking about Craig Gordon's possible move from Celtic to Chelsea, which didn't happen in the end. But Chris Sutton made the point that only half facetiously, I think, that Celtic could actually play without a goalkeeper and still win the Scottish League. And he was widely ridiculed by Chappers and whoever else was in the studio. I think they had Chris Boyd on the phone, maybe. And but, you know, I think it is an exaggeration to say that they would win the league without a goalkeeper. But wasn't there that stat recently where Bayern Munich could have played without a keeper? And if they'd let in every shot on target, they'd still have been top of the league. And Man City without Bravo, having a broomstick with a shirt on it instead. Yeah. There is a sporting chance the broomstick might stop something, though.
Yeah, I like that you said the broomstick.
They're knocking on the door of the top four again. They're the big winners of the midweek from the leading teams. The big losers, of course, Arsenal. Ian, Arsenal. Oof. Sutton United must be laughing.
Sutton United must be fancying their chances. It was such a poor performance in the basics. It's not that Arsenal are a bad team. We know they're not a bad team. They're very good in lots and lots of ways, but they conceded a goal because they couldn't take a throw-in properly, because Gabriel just sort of absent-mindedly tossed the ball vaguely in the direction of Aaron Ramsey and bang, Watford broke. And this is a Watford team that hadn't won since December the 10th. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of loosely knit collection of investment opportunities just about above the waterline. And they just, I mean, I'm exasperated.
Loath as I am to make it all about a big team doing badly, are you saying that Watford actually weren't that special? It wasn't an ingenious move by Mazzarri. This was... because even Wenger came out and said afterwards that his team basically weren't up for the... He said mentally they weren't ready for the game. They thought that just turning up would be enough.
Well, evidently. And Watford were doing all the things that Arsenal weren't doing. They were pressing hard and well. They were running, they were tracking back. Particularly Niang, the new arrival. Who basically just owned the entire flank. Mm. Defensively as well as offensively. I didn't know that he had that in him. Not being a...
I mean, you mentioned that. I was surprised. I mean, he wasn't noted, was he, for that? Or is it a new club bounce?
Well, he's come on a lot since his early days at Milan. And part of that was the 6 months he spent with a proper coach, Giampiero Gasperini. And so he can do both phases, but he's just inconsistent. And he's got everything, really, to be a great, great player. He's still very young. He's been on the scene for a long, long time. But... I was curious to see Milan let him go because he'd become one of the faces of that Milan. Remember a few years ago, they took a picture of Balotelli, El Shaarawy and Niang. They all had their mohawk haircuts.
Right.
And he was the last man standing.
Poignant,
that
poignant.
Very poignant.
Right, okay. Well, Arsenal then, I mean, Watford, well done that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're an Arsenal fan, you must be absolutely fed up with this kind of thing.
Well, it's just all the simple things and it just keeps on happening. And you have a game like Southampton away in the Cup, where, all right, it's a second string Southampton team, it's kind of a second string Arsenal team as well, but they just absolutely obliterated them. And then they go from that to losing at home to Watford. And you know what? They'll probably go and beat Chelsea at the weekend.
Well, that's a big shout, Ian.
Yeah, they'll beat Chelsea at the weekend, then they'll lose the next two on the bounce.
Of course, they did beat Chelsea when they last met at the Emirates. The victory which actually started this incredible run from Conte's team. Are you suggesting that they're going to bookend Chelsea's purple patch thus?
Well, there's absolutely no logical reason to suggest that will happen. It's just one of those things that occasionally happens in football. But there was an interview with, I think it was Rio Ferdinand this week, where he was talking about how when they got to this time of year in the Manchester United dressing room, they were always the elder statesman of the team on their case. It's like, this is where we don't slip up. This is where we get the job done. This is as important as any other game. And I know it's a hoary old cliche, but it just doesn't look like there's any of that character in this Arsenal team.
Wow.
Well, you say their fans are probably really fed up with this kind of thing, and obviously they are, and Wenger is fed up with it, but do the players care? I'm not so sure they're that fussed anymore. They certainly don't convey the impression that they're particularly bothered about winning the league.
Alexis Sanchez is cutting an increasingly frustrated figure.
Well, he clearly cares, yes. But his frustration with all his teammates would suggest they're not on the same wavelength at all.
You watch him, the next Arsenal game you watch for Sanchez, every time a pass isn't quite right, his arms will be up in the air. And he didn't used to do that.
Right. Remember Luciano Gaucci, frustrated with his team, saying that because he was a racehorse owner, he'd like to just field 11 horses because he said they'd be much more reliable. I imagine that Alexis feels the same way about his puppies. If he could play with 10 puppies... Anyway, that's probably enough analysis on that. Or Sasha, would you like to add something?
No,
really?
Well, at this moment,
are Arsenal going to beat Chelsea at Stamford Bridge?
No. And one of the big reasons for that is I think for Conte, this is a huge game for him. This is probably the main revenge match for him. He always goes on about the 3-0 against Arsenal.
Does he?
How much it turned into, things have turned around. I think he mentioned it again after the Liverpool game. I think it's just for him to reverse that defeat is massively important.
Because the thing is, Chelsea don't have a great record against the big sides, do they?
But they beat all these smaller ones. And you have to bear in mind that the two defeats against Liverpool and Arsenal came before the formation change. And Conte is very keen to point out that was a completely different team to what
the defeat against Spurs didn't, though. And they were held to a 1-1 draw on Tuesday night, and you were there.
I was there, but they are so good. Chelsea, very, very competent performance. They played 5-4-1 for the first 20 minutes just to kind of soak up the Liverpool pressure a little bit, maybe try to kill the crowd a little. And then they basically broke out, took advantage superbly off a Liverpool lapse in concentration.
A Liverpool lapse in concentration.
Well, yeah, I know. These things happen. However, while Simon Mignolet has been widely ridiculed for the conceded goal, I have to say that Luis, A, his reaction, B, the way it was taken, and C, you know, I play in goal sometimes, and when you try to build a wall and the players are just messing around and not doing what you're asking them to, it is the most irritating, annoying and embarrassing thing for a goalkeeper, because from referee's point of view, he doesn't need to wait for you to set your wall. He just needs to push it back 10 yards. After that, it can be taken. And when you're trying to do that as a goalkeeper and you're trying to push your lineup, it's a lot of things to do. And I think Mignolet at that stage, okay, maybe he doesn't have enough authority, but it's quite embarrassing for him.
So it's like minding mice at a crossroads.
While somebody's taking a free kick at you.
Yeah.
So he's basically caught the blame for that when it was actually them not paying attention.
I think it should be a collective sort of thing rather than just the goalkeeper. But I have to say, just before that goal, I was thinking, if Liverpool concede now, because the atmosphere at Anfield was quite good, how would the crowd react? How would the players react? And they reacted quite well, I thought. I mean, there was a dodgy period for about 5-10 minutes, but I think the crowd kept positive. I mean, the cop was singing, like, Old Pal Job on the 42nd, 43rd minute. And so when you arrived at half-time, you're sort of thinking, Liverpool aren't quite out of it.
Mm.
And in the second half,
were you wearing a blue jacket at all, was that?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't the guy that Jürgen Klopp got so upset with about the passbacks. But he was making that point very firmly after the game. And I think the way Liverpool opened Chelsea up, it was two ways. So first time Firmino skied the ball in about 48th minute, counter-attack, Azpilicueta slightly out of position, you pull apart the two other central defenders. But the way also the goal was worked, it was a genius ball from Henderson. And if you look at the Chelsea line, they're actually a perfect five line, except they're shifted one over, so Milner has that space to come around behind. But one thing as well I have to point out, the pace of the game was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, 10 years ago when Mourinho and Benitez used to play against each other, two big, heavy sides, but they weren't playing as quickly. And Rafa Honigstein actually asked Conte after the game, you know, as an Italian manager, it must be quite annoying that you can't control this thing. And Conte said, well, it's basically very difficult to adjust any corrections in this type of game.
It's just going too quickly.
Just too quickly. You could see the subs coming on. Even Pedro took a bit of time to readjust. Mane came on to, you know, great fanfare. He took quite a bit of time to get going as well. Maybe he needed an extra 10 minutes. Also, Mane coming on, immediately Liverpool make a mistake, Lovren out of position, Matip kicks out, cost a penalty. And Mignolet, fair play, redeemed himself. But after that, I felt Chelsea could have won the game. Just the momentum swung. And then Firmino misses a header in the very last minute. So I thought overall it was quite, I think a draw was a fair result.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea still very strong. N'Golo Kanté in central midfield, 14 interceptions, absolutely extraordinary. Liverpool out of the race completely, but Chelsea have shown what a good team they are, I think.
We'll probably get onto that later, but N'Golo Kanté made more tackles that night than the entire Leicester team did against Burnley.
A stat that I think Gary Lineker was tweeting was that N'Golo Kanté has made more tackles than anybody in the Premier League over the last three seasons, and he's only been in the Premier League for two.
Well, anyway, I mean, I don't want to do the man down at all. He's remarkable, but I think Liverpool made it quite easy for him, particularly in the first half. I mean, it was like they were being kettled through the centre. Mm-hmm. Matic and Kante were in front of the back five. Chelsea soaking up pressure, and Liverpool seemed strangely reluctant until maybe the second half to try and get in behind their full backs. our wing backs and I'm about to be shot down here.
I don't think Liverpool quite had the pace, but one thing I would say is I thought Emre Can was particularly negative in the first half, and in the second half he got forward a little bit more. But what I would say about Kante as well, a friend of mine made a good observation after the game that he was into the spaces Liverpool created before Liverpool created them. He was just anticipating the game so well, and you know it's very hard to play against, especially when you have someone as ponderous as Can in that midfield, especially in the first half.
Right. Okay. Okay, well, Chelsea anyway, despite that draw, extending their lead over, it's now Spurs in second place. They've moved past Arsenal on goal difference with Liverpool a point further back, 10 points off the top. Man City, as we mentioned, goal difference behind them. Spurs, who had that draw away at the Stadium of Light. Danny Rose picking up an injury. Not sure the lengths or the seriousness of that stop for him. But a massive point for Sunderland. He must be absolutely gutted to find out at the end of the game that everybody else down at the bottom had picked up points too.
Well, the three teams directly above them all got points. Hull got one, Palace and Swansea got three each. So Sunderland are, what, 5 points adrift of safety at the moment. Not looking particularly good for them.
Jack Rodwell's winless run with Sunderland goes on to 37 games.
37 games, yeah. I believe.
And he's... quite lucky he doesn't have a bit of a break until he makes it 38.
Not the only one who's lucky they didn't have a bit of a break.
I think he should have been sent off. But, yeah, he dodged a bullet.
In its own way.
Or did he?
In its own way, it was magnificent. I mean, Sunderland,
a wildly swinging leg.
Sunderland haven't done much that's caught the eye this season, but what a way to almost get yourself sent off.
He's caught the knee more than caught the eye.
He's basically just run over and kicked him up in the air.
Yeah, nice. We'll be talking about that fascinating battle that Sunderland are very much a part of down at the bottom right after this.
This Guardian podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. To find out more about how to set your website apart, head to squarespace.com/guardian.
Battle at the bottom. Swansea won, Hull drew, Palace won. Basically, everybody else is really getting into gear now. So how bad do things look for Leicester? We've got a couple of questions here about relegation. Let's see. Bohemian Schnapsody, following wins for Palace and Swansea, who will go down? Forsberg, who says, thanks for Oslo show. What's the highest placed team you think might get relegated? Oh, everyone have a look at your tables.
Bournemouth.
Really? Ooh. In 14th place, they're currently 7 points off the drop. But, Barry?
I think Bournemouth, despite having a 5-point cushion over the six teams below them, are not out of the woods yet. They're not getting particularly good results, not playing particularly well. Eddie Howe has voiced his concern about them. But more than likely going to be three from the current bottom six. And I think Leicester are going to go.
I'm
very confident Leicester are going to go.
I think at some point someone there's going to have to make a horrible decision. One of those someone's going away to live on a farm type decisions.
Well, in an effort to stay up, the bottom six in the Premier League have spent more than the whole of Serie A in the January transfer.
Really? Wow, that's true. And who spent the most out of the bottom six? Was it Crystal Palace?
Must be Palace.
Crystal Palace.
Must be, yeah. How much have Palace spent? I think they spent $31 million in January, and they spent a shed load in the summer as well. So the fact they're in the bottom three is, you know.
Although they've just gone and got a win, haven't they? At Bournemouth.
Yeah.
With a clean sheet and that kind of thing.
And they entertain Sunderland on Saturday.
Yeah, that's a huge game. In another Big Sam derby. Stop me if you've heard this one before. That is remarkably the third time in the last six fixtures for him that he's faced one of his former clubs. Right. It's not that remarkable. But anyway.
Was two of them Bolton?
Yeah, all right. Anyway, all right, well, that's a huge game, Crystal Palace against Sunderland, and it's at Selhurst Park. How confident are you for the Black Cats, Barry?
I'm not confident at all. I'm going to it, actually, so looking forward to it, yeah.
All right, okay.
I like going to Selhurst.
What about Leicester, who'll be hosting Man United? Echoes of that famous 5-3 back in the days of Van Gaal.
And mad Nigel Pearson.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think they're in so much trouble.
Leicester.
They just look so empty.
They haven't scored a goal in 2017.
No, not one. And that's not a great start. Mm. But it's just the intensity that was there, particularly in the second half of last season. it's just gone. And the tactics are getting changed on a weekly basis. The players don't seem to be entirely happy with the situation. The zip has gone completely. I'm very, very concerned for them. I think
like
they're going
a finger
down.
Jacket.
The game they played at the beginning of the season, I think alarm bells started ringing, because the goals that Leicester were conceding in that game at Old Trafford were shocking. The corners, you know, again, that's been a frequent Achilles heel. And at that time, Ranieri was doing, not tinkering, but he was kind of saying, I'm taking players off or resting players for the Champions League. Hasn't worked.
To be fair, though, the defeat that they suffered this midweek, the goal they conceded there was somewhat compromised by a bit of a handball on.
Oh, true.
I only saw highlights of this game, but from what I saw, Burnley should have beaten them very, very comfortably.
And they should have had a penalty earlier in the game, Burnley, as well.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But also, it's not just defensively, it's the state of Vardy going forward. I think he had three presentable chances against Burnley, and he just doesn't know what to do with them anymore. Really, really sad to watch.
In an alternate, parallel, much nicer universe, probably, in which Vardy had taken up Arsene Wenger's kind invitation over the summer, what would we now be looking at? Would he be doing really well, or would Arsenal be down in the relegation? How would it have worked out?
Probably on the bench.
Game.
Really?
I think he'd probably be on loan somewhere now. Are they possibly still... at Leicester.
Yeah, possibly. Are they still making that movie, by the way? Is it the same people who are making the UKIP Bad Boys of Brexit one?
Oh, Jesus, is that a thing?
I don't know. That is a that thing. You're not aware of that?
No.
Well, supposedly it is. So they say that they're having talks with Hollywood people. Anyway, I'll return
to... Johnny Depp needs a gig.
So. There you are.
Johnny Depp is Nigel Farage.
So... there you go. Leicester are hosting Man United. But then again, Man United haven't exactly been shining over the last couple of games.
Well, they seem to play Hull in every single... Every time I look, turn on a TV, Man U are playing Hull and right, not and beating them.
They're not getting any better at it, are they?
No. Well, they drew with them last night.
That's true. They did get better because the previous game they'd lost.
Yeah, well, unless you're Jose Mourinho, in which case they didn't. That was also a draw.
Right.
But... I don't know what to say.
Right,
really.
Well, James, I know
you took
a particular interest in this game because of Andrea Ranocchia's arrival at Hull, but it was actually Jakubovic, the keeper, who was the star of the show.
Mm. And remember, Jakubovic, for a long time, was not Hull's first-choice goalkeeper. He would occasionally play in the cup competitions, and there was that incredible performance he put in at the Emirates against Arsenal where you know, he could have caught grains of sand in that game. And... in this, likewise, he was fantastic. But, yeah, Marcus Silva again, I think he's shown himself, yeah, he's been dealt a really bad hand at Hull.
Right.
And, yeah, he still seems to be taking some credit away from Jose Mourinho. But, of course, this was all a conspiracy against
One hesitates to air the latest Mourinho things. And William Hughes saying, does Mourinho think Trump has been grabbing too many headlines? might explain a lot. I didn't see what the conspiracy talk. I did see him accuse Martin Fisher of the BBC, if you do not know football, you should not have a microphone in your hand.
Well, I mean, that's going to put a lot of us out of work, in fairness, that sort of thinking.
To be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't the only one who seemed a bit grumpy after the games. Zlatan Ibrahimovic saying that Jakubovic had been nothing special and it was Mata's poor finishing rather than the goalkeeper who...
Yeah, like Slasher, I used to play in goal as well. And speaking as someone who specialised in saves for the cameras and having just watched the highlights, yeah, he was definitely doing saves for the cameras.
All right.
I think Zlatan may have had a point as you know, nastily as it was put.
Right. Jose also got the hump because... Jurgen Klopp had it screamed in the fourth official's face the previous evening when Liverpool, Mignolet saved Diego Costa's penalty, and he subsequently apologised and the fourth official said, it's okay, I admire your passion. And Jose was very upset because he doesn't get the same treatment. No one admires his passion, they just give him touchline bans.
Yeah,
sort of got a point there though, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, has he not earned that?
Yeah,
well, yeah, his reputation a long goes record. Before him.
And he does have previous in sending players out to blame referees for various things that happen in his team, whether or not it's the referee's fault. So
yeah.
Slightly vague.
Sasha's very keen to jump in.
I also particularly enjoyed Mourinho's sort of complaining about Hull's gamesmanship after the game. I thought it was just hilarious.
Portuguese manager going to Old Trafford, shutting the game down. Exactly. In no way a familiar scenario.
And also just a quick shout out to Laza Markovic, who I thought was very unlucky not to score with a beautiful, beautiful shot from just outside the box. He hit the post.
All right. And he can't play, of course, in Hull's next game, in which they try and build on this momentum that Marco Silva's putting together there, because he's on loan from Liverpool, and the ridiculous Premier League rules are that you can't field loan players against their parent club. So,
sorry, just what you were saying there about Jose's comments, you know, if you don't know football or understand football, you shouldn't be holding a microphone. I watched a highlight show in the hotel room in Oslo last night, and that their answer to Jeff Shreves or whoever doesn't mess about, gets stuck in with very hard questions. You know,
was it in Norwegian?
No, he does a little bit to camera first in Norwegian, then turns to the manager and addresses him in English.
Right.
And yeah, he was straight in, sort of savage, Slaven Bilic, you know, where did it all go wrong? You know, you were pretty useless tonight. Bilic was a little bit surprised, I think, because over here, the reporters tend to tiptoe and skirt around the hard questions.
Unless it's Jess Shreves with Ivanovic missing the Champions League final.
Well, that wasn't a question. That was more a guess what?
You won't.
Well, of course, Norwegian football coverage is famous throughout the, you know, only the best for Norwegian for TV2. Ian.
Yeah.
Anyway, Hull, they've moved off the bottom and they're taking on Liverpool. And Sasha, Liverpool's record against the smaller sides, I mean, Swansea, Sunderland, name another one. Is it Bournemouth?
Draws at home with Plymouth.
Burnley. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, stuff like that. I mean,
so what's going to happen?
I thought the Chelsea performance was probably Liverpool's most competent one in January. And I think there's chinks of lights in that darkness. Also, Klopp's going to have a few days to prepare now. I think he's made a big point of, like, you know, he had 10 games in 32 days. It's quite tough. I don't think he has the squad to rotate. It's going to be first team. Mane will be better. Coutinho against Chelsea was still far from 100%.
Right.
So he's going to be better. So I think Liverpool will actually do all right.
At the KCOM, James, are the Brave Tigers going to roar?
I think they will. Yeah. And also, this is, I think, the seventh game out of eight in what is a terrible run of fixtures for Hull.
Oh, yeah.
So if they can get a result in this game and kind of manage that deficit as it is now, 4 points, and then the fixtures get a little bit easier for them, I think, as with Swansea, they could begin to start a great escape of their own.
Wow.
And
that would be the greatest of great escapes, wouldn't it?
Would it?
Considering how much disarray they're in behind the scenes, their new manager has just come in and had several players sold out from under him. I actually think they might do it, and I think it will be even more remarkable than that Pulis keeping Palace up that time.
Would that be do you think that's the kind of benchmark?
For me, that's the benchmark. Or maybe when Brian Robson, West Brom stayed up despite Brian
Hodgson
Robson.
Fulham. Hodgson Fulham for me is.
Gus Poyet at Sunderland. I did Tottenham 5, Sunderland 1. And I think it was about late March, early April.
Right.
And Gus Poyet was basically so low in his chair, all you could see were his eyebrows in the press conference afterward. He was done. He was gone. Sunderland were finished. And still they survived.
Wow. One of the greatest escapes I can do is actually Parma, mid-noughties under Claudio Ranieri, when he was dropped in and with about 13 games to go and got them. Did he get them into the European positions?
I'm not sure about that.
He rocketed them up the table.
Yeah, he got Giuseppe Rossi from on loan.
Yeah.
There was another one as well years and years ago when Sheffield United under Harry Bassett, they had 6 points at Christmas. And were ridiculously adrift and stayed up. That at the time, I think, was heralded as possibly the greatest ever.
Nigel Pearce's Leicester for me.
Yeah.
You know the greatest one that never was?
What's that?
Brooking at West Ham. 3 games to save them. No managerial experience, but he's Trevor Brooking. And I think he might have won all three and still gone down with 42 points. If Jacob was here, he could tell me.
Also this weekend, you've got Everton taking on Bournemouth. Barry, that could be another step towards the precipice for the Cherries that you're predicting there. Saints, meanwhile, are hosting West Ham, will be smarting from the spanking they've just received.
I don't think Bournemouth will go down, but I think they're still in danger. I wouldn't think anyone above them is in any danger.
Well, Watford are only a point above them. Saints, though, Alistair Smoot, or Smout, possibly, Alistair, says, Gabbiadini, do you agree Gabbiadini will be a great fit at Southampton? He can play anywhere up top in their diamond.
I think he's great value for £14.5 million, because had he not been playing behind Gonzalo Higuain last year and not getting any game time, I think he's a player who could fetch a lot more money than that, and he can do a lot of things. He can play on the right-hand side, so he can cut in on his left, and he's got a great left foot, scores wonderful free kicks, learned how to take a free kick whilst he was at Samp under Sinisa Mihajlovic, and is a good second striker. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see, you know, where he plays, whether he's to complement Redmond or to be an alternative to Long or something like that.
It's interesting, this business of learning free kicks under somebody, because you know, a lot of people go out and practice some of that. But if the people who have been really extraordinary at free kicks, so Zola, for example, he always put that down to the fact that he used to train with Maradona, who showed him how to do it proper. And Mihajlovic, statistically, is about the best that Serie A has ever seen.
Yeah, he is 28, I think. Pirlo, by the time I think Pirlo went to the States, I don't think he'd either matched him, but he hadn't gone past him.
And certainly not in his strike rate.
Yeah.
Didn't Mihajlovic have a free kick-off with someone?
Well, he invited Pirlo to do it. Did they ever stage this or not?
He didn't accept.
Oh.
But yeah, he would routinely, for his goalkeepers, he would bet the money on how many he would score past them to try and make them better at Samp anyway.
Right, and he'll be doing that presumably to Joe Hart.
Yeah, apparently he hasn't been doing that. Joe Hart's been complaining about that. Apparently he's just been teaching him theory on it rather than practice.
Right, baby steps.
Yeah.
Okay. In other games this weekend news, you've got Spurs taking on Borough, and Watford are up against Burnley. Burnley, of course, have that rotten record away from home, but it's so very hard to know what kind of performance you're going to get from the Hornets at Vicarage Road. And Stoke, will this be Saïda Berahino's first start for his new club if he plays this weekend?
It will be, because it was Peter Crouch who started last night, and he scored.
His 100th goal, and...
And he did the robot.
Yeah,
like an old-age pensioner getting up at 5 a.m. every day because he knows there's not much time left. Crouch getting that robot out there.
As I said, he was a bit of a rusty robot.
That's really bleak.
Oh, Ian. God, yeah, that was.
That was actually quite a happy moment.
That's actually upset me a bit, and I said it.
Wow. But anyway, let's cheer ourselves up by saying welcome back to football, Saïda Berahino. Finally, he's broken free of and where's he going to be playing?
At West Brom.
Oh, my God. Just when you think you're out, they drag you back in. Okay.
I'm sure he'll get a very warm reception.
I'm sure he will. Posts. Oh, I've only got this one, actually. How about some love for the Football League's best-dressed and longest-serving manager, says Derwin's Revenge. Can you guess who he's talking about?
Paul Tisdale.
Okay, you can. Exeter were rock bottom of League Two in November. Now they're 10 games unbeaten and counting. And then he actually posts in again. He says, make that 11 and counting. They're now up to fourth from rock bottom. That's remarkable. They were rock bottom in November, and now they're fourth.
They didn't win any of their first 9 home games, I think, picking 2 points.
And this was after a victory over the luxuriously coiffed Gareth Ainsworth's Wickham Wanderers. Right.
There can't have been two more trendy technical areas, you know. Sorry, well, a technical area can't be trendy, but you know what I mean.
No,
the
absolutely.
Occupants.
And in this case, I think it can.
Of technical areas at simultaneously at the same game can't be more trendy. I think Tisdale's had many, many offers to manage other clubs apart from Exeter, and he just can't be bothered. He's happy where he is.
Right.
No desire to leave.
Okay.
And he rocks a mean cravat.
Certainly does, and that's absolutely extraordinary. What a rise. Now, what else is happening in football, Sasha, this weekend?
Well, it's actually happened in midweek, but Coupe de France, oui. 100 ans d'histoire et de passion. More than 8,000 teams in Coupe de France, and they just had the round of the last 32. PSG beat Rennes away 4-0, Julian Draxler, again, proving what a great investment he is with 2 lovely goals. But the game of the round was FC Chambly against Monaco. Monaco disrespecting the Coupe de France with 9 changes from the weekend when they played PSG, I believe.
Right.
But they were 3-0 up at Chambly, and Chambly, third division Chambly, 6 promotions in 15 years, pulled it back to 3-3 in the 93rd minute. It's a great scene because they got a fullback like running into space while all Monaco players are on to one side and just steaming and shooting across the goalkeeper. 93rd minute, absolutely brilliant. Unfortunately, right. In extra time, they conceded off two corners and have gone out, but it was a brave, brave performance.
That's extraordinary, isn't it? So Monaco go through to the last 16. They're already through to the final of the Coupe de France, where they're taking on PSG, and they're locked in a three-way tussle with PSG and Nice, who I think I'm right in saying they face this weekend for the French title. It's so very exciting there. What else have you got from European football, Sasha?
Well, I've got Inter 1, Lazio 2 in the Coppa Italia, and I've got Roma 2, Cesena 1. 97th minute penalty by Francesco Totti.
Totti?
307th goal for Roma.
Wow.
Soft penalty.
Soft penalty, yeah. Mm-hmm. Poor goalkeeper, kind of took out Strootman a little bit, but wasn't really...
But now, the semi-finals are quite exciting because you've got Higuain going back to Napoli and you've got Lazio-Roma. So, again, revenge for that final a few years ago. But also a bit of a conundrum for the authorities as to when to play that game.
Ooh,
because
obviously
it'll be in midweek, so it'll have to be on an evening and they hate playing Derby della Capitale in the evening.
And with good reason.
With good reason.
With very good reason. In Germany... there's a clash between Leipzig and Dortmund, which has got the pulses racing for fans of the Bundesliga. But I'll just return to Italy, if I may, to say that Sunday night's clash in Serie A looks an almighty one, because the scenario here is you've got Juventus, who've won 5 straight titles, bit of a juggernaut, little bit of a slip recently against Fiorentina, but then they got back on track with this fantastic 5, James. That's the new Juve look that they'll all be adopting around Europe soon.
Yeah, the 5-star formation. It looks really good. It basically allows them to play all of their stars in the same team. And yeah, when Juventus lost to Fiorentina, the criticism was that they couldn't find any balance. They were still trying to find balance this season. And so, yeah, the following week, Allegri named the most unbalanced-looking team. Mm. And counterintuitively, they now have found this balance.
Right.
And with, you've got Higuain up front, Dybala, Pjanic, but Mandzukic playing as a kind of left midfield player. Which
is it 4 points clear?
Yes, but of course they play Crotone.
Right, 4 points clear with a game in hand, which you'd expect them to bag 3 fat points from. Can anyone stop them? Well, unexpectedly, a hero may have arisen.
Yeah, and Inter finally playing to their potential. They are the form team in Italy at the moment. They went out of the Coppa in midweek, but that's because they had their heads already in this game against Juventus. They've won 7 games in a row in the league.
Right.
And since, if the league had started when Frank de Boer got sacked...
And Pioli took over.
And Pioli, well... give the interim manager, Stefano Vecchia, some props. They would be top of the league.
Right.
Inter. So, yeah.
Okay. So, now they're going to take on Juventus in the Derby of Italy. Mm-hmm. Their arch rivals. This is, I would argue, a bigger game for Inter than the Milan Derby.
Yeah. Particularly after what happened in the 90s with Marco Giuliano and Ronaldo. Mm. And interestingly, for the first time, representatives in Inter, people on the board, will be at this game in Turin. They haven't been to a Derby d'Italia in Turin since that time in protest. So this is because the new owner, Steven Zhang, is...
It's almost 20 years there. On from that.
Exactly. But then, of course, Calciopoli. So that again... heightened this rivalry and made it particularly poisonous.
Okay, well now most times this season when we said here comes a big test for Juve, they've passed it with fairly flying colours. Inter, though, beat them last time they met.
They did, and I think the issue coming into this game, I suppose, is Juventus' record at the J Stadium, which is they've won 28 games in a row there. So it's difficult for anyone to win. But Inter do have a certain Mario Icardi, and Icardi scored, 7 goals in 8 games against Juventus. It's hard to figure out who dislikes Icardi more, Maxi Lopez or the old lady.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And in both cases, there's an old lady involved, of course. Nice.
Are the other teams in Serie A likely to agree to Inter's request to pretend the league only started when Frank de Boer left?
Yeah, unfortunately not, Paz.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
But I was just going to say that they are very much knocking on the door of Italy's Champions League places. Mm. Are they, 1 point behind Lazio and Roma now?
Yes.
Let's get the table out and check. Hold on. Have you? What, the Italian one? Oh, I haven't got it. Has anyone got it? Has anyone got an Italian table?
Oh, here.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Well, they are knocking on the door now of Italy's Champions League positions. They're in fourth, 3 points behind Napoli. Huh. Barry?
I was just going to ask if we had time for a quick feedback corner.
Why not?
Well, it's just one of the more interesting transfers of deadline day was Celtic's Ryan Christie, who has previous in the field of... He went on Twitter once and said how much he effing hates Aberdeen. Hashtag sheepshaggers. Guess where he's gone on loan? It's a warm... you know, Aberdeen's a cold place at the best of times. But I think for poor young Ryan, it may be particularly cold. And then further south, you had... is it Matthew Taylor swapping Bristols? You're pathetic. You really are.
No, but Bristol's bad.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
But he's gone from...
Rovers to City.
Yeah. Hmm. Another football faux pas.
That... there are some cities that you can cross relatively easily.
Milan.
Milan would be probably the chief example. And I suppose London, there's been a fair bit of that because there's so many clubs. But in football terms, is Bristol one... Is that almost like a kind of Berlin in terms of its east-westness?
I don't really know. I haven't spent much time in Bristol.
I think it's been 30 years since the transfer between clubs.
Yeah.
Mm. Wow.
And his new club did a thing on Twitter, welcome to Bristol, you know, similar to the... Tevez, Manchester City advertising hoarding.
Yeah. Producer Ben just weighing in to say that Celtic, by the way, in football news, are 27 games unbeaten now.
It's breaking Jock Steen's record.
Oh,
with the 67-68 Celtic side.
Right.
25 points ahead of Rangers.
Pow.
Well, Rangers got slaughtered last night by the Hearts team that's managed by the nerd with the laptop.
Oh, really? Oh, what result for the Einstein. Magnificent, because he had really been struggling. How many wins has he had so far?
Not many. I'd been kind of keeping an eye on just out of interest. I think he'd only had one win in six and wasn't doing well. I have a feeling that game, that victory over Rangers may have saved him.
Right.
But I did see Ewan Murray was tweeting that Hearts were really, really impressive against Rangers. And then some Rangers fans were weighing in and saying, well, it wasn't so much the fact that Hearts were very impressive, just that Rangers were terrible. So,
right. Two sides of the same coin, very much yin and yang, that kind of thing. Anyway, that brings us to an end. A shame, really, because we're just touching on the most interesting bits now. Oh, no, Sasha?
Can I just last shout out, just finishing on the goalkeeping theme, Africa Cup of Nations. Burkina Faso against Egypt, the shootout. 1-1 after extra time. Check out the two goals that were scored by Salah and Bansi. Very, very good. Penalty shootout, Hervé Kofi. The 20-year-old Burkina Faso keeper saves the first penalty. All the penalties are the penalties get scored. He steps up to take the fourth. Essam El Khadari, 44 years old, four-time winner of the Africa Cup of Nations, eight-time Egypt champion, four-time champions, African Champions League winner for Egypt in goal, saves it. And then he saves the final penalty from Bertrand Traoré as well, currently at Ajax, obviously Chelsea player. So, heartbreak for Burkina Faso, Egypt in the ninth final.
Right. We don't know who they're going to be facing yet because Ghana played tonight against Cameroon.
Indeed.
Oh, and it's Kevin Kilbane's 40th birthday. Yesterday,
is it?
I think. Friend of the show, Kevin Kilbane.
Right. Well,
he's now an old man.
Yeah, he may well be listening because so many of them are.
Happy birthday, Kevin.
Right. Great. Any shout outs you want to make in at all?
None at all.
Right. James?
I only care about me.
Only to Oslo.
Only to Oslo.
Thank you for having us.
We salute you, Oslo.
And your beetroot.
Yes.
The beetroot? Yeah.
Godgvidge, Nordiger.
And their bar with 80s arcade games.
Yeah,
and
that
which
was
we lost you for about 45 minutes to time pilot.
That's really not true. It only seemed like, for me, it was only 3 minutes.
Well, it was time pilot.
Yeah. That's brought us to the end of our time on this podcast. We will be back on Monday, listeners. One hopes you will be too as we review all those games that we were just talking about and what happens in the Africa Cup of Nations, and hear from Philippe Auclair, who will be talking about France and Ting. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you soon.